Blade Trinity. The culmination of the only Blades trilogy.
There's only been one Blade. There's only ever going to be one Blade.
This film suffers from Part 3 syndrome. Part 3s are always a tough nut to crack. Plagued by copious amounts of on-set drama, this early Marvel movie certainly had an uphill battle to fight. I had this film on DVD in high school.
It's been 84 years.
This was unfortunately the Blade film that I watched the most in my youth.
Are you stupid?
Dropping on home video in 2005, this was, at the time, one of those newer comic book movies that I craved so much. Because back then, comic book movies were massively more scarce than they are now. But the movie was a bit of a letdown then, and a lot more of a letdown last night when I watched it again.
Well, Jonathan, I'm the opposite of you. I had seen the first two Blade films, I believe, in the theaters. And the third one, I heard so many bad things about it, I just avoided it for 20 years. So the question now is whether I thank you for having me watch it for the purposes of being on this show, or do I damn you for having me watch it? And honestly, I'm going to thank you, because I think, at least for me, this is a case of when you hear how bad something is and you watch it and it's not that bad, you think, hey, maybe that was pretty good. So it was very stylistic. It was very early 2000s films. It was what all those superhero movies are. There's black leather. There's industrial music. It was R-rated, so there's a lot of violence. But it did have some good things. It had Wesley Snipes as cool as can be. Ryan Reynolds was funny then as he is now. And Jessica Biel is a hot actress. So, I mean, that's the Trinity. That's what they were going for. That's what they wanted to do. I know there were a lot of problems on set, and there was a lot of things set up in the movie that never panned out. But it was watchable. It was fun. It was fine. I laughed. I thought there were some cool moments. It wasn't super cheesy, but it wasn't the greatest movie. But it was better than I thought it would be after avoiding it for 20 years.
I was surprised. I had seen it one time before this, and then a couple days ago I watched it again. And I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. I won't say it's a good film by any means, but the one thing that stuck out to me is that it's written like a comic book. Like, if you look at the dialogue and everything, and I know that Goyer had a writing credit on it, but if you look at the dialogue and then you like think about, okay, how would this translate to the page? Like, it would probably be a pretty good comic book. When you're translating it to a film, a lot of the dialogue comes off as stilted and kind of like a bunch of just one-liners right in a row. When you're like, what are we doing here? I was actually surprised how much I thought, oh, this is watchable. This is enjoyable. You know, it felt like a late 90s film, but it came out in what, 2004? Or you said the DVD was 2006.
I think it was 2006. I might be wrong about that, but.
Well, I mean, back then the DVDs came out much later, right? It could have been an 05, 06 movie. I was surprised how far past the 90s, because it definitely felt like the 90s Punisher to me.
It was 2004, if I remember, because I was about 14 years old, I think, when I watched it. I had good memories of it. When I sort of went to go get it on Google Play, I saw 22% Rotten Tomatoes rating. So I was just like, but fair enough. A lot of Rotten Tomatoes, the bad stuff is the stuff I like and the good stuff is the stuff I don't like. So I kind of went in there. I was a bit scared to watch it again because I was like, you know how you are. You're extra critical now. You know, I'm super critical with the post of Endgame Marvel movies and the pre-Superman James Gunn movie. I tried to not be that critical person. Put it on. Just got to sit myself a big bag of popcorn and some milkshakes, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. What, it didn't taint it? Yeah, look, I know it was going into it, it's not going to be the best movie. As far as a trilogy movie goes, it went well, and it was the first kind of Marvel team-up, wasn't it? Because I think DC did it with Batman, Robin, and Batgirl. Beale did an excellent job, I thought. She had Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow vibes when she came out, and some of the action scenes were pretty decent. Yeah, like you said about Ryan Reynolds, he's always been the same, hasn't he? He's just like Deadpool, just as Hannibal King. Same level of humor. That's just him being him, isn't it? It wasn't as bad as people made it out to be. And when I was sort of Googling it, I didn't realize all the history that came with it and all the post-production stuff. I didn't really pick that up too obviously in the movie.
If you just sit and watch Blade Trinity, it's a D-. It just doesn't work. But if you know what they went through to get that movie made,
Yeah. It
is an A+. The fact that that movie exists puts it above Citizen Kane. The fact that they, with all the craziness that went down, he would only answer to the name Blade. You couldn't call him
They would only answer to Blade.
It's really amazing how they got the ball rolling so fast on a trilogy in 7 years. It really shows you how hot the Blade commodity was at this time. I mean, that was one of the biggest surprising box office successes at the time. In 99, when the first Blade film came out, you know, expectations were probably relatively low. We all knew at that time how these Marvel movies did at the box office. So it really kind of blew expectations out of the water. Yeah, so you mentioned earlier, David S. Goyer, he wrote part of the script or maybe had like an assistant writing credit or whatever, but he was the one who directed this film. I think he was the main writer for the first two Blade films. You know, the first director for Blade 1 ended up not directing a movie ever again after he directed League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
League of Extraordinary.
And then the second Blade film was directed by the legendary Guillermo del Toro. It's just very interesting that these directors came in and directed, you know, one Blade movie, and then they was like, I'm done. I'm out. It makes me wonder, with all the issues that they had on set with Blade allegedly, or I'm sorry, Wesley Snipes allegedly giving the director post-it notes and not even talking to people unless they referred to him as Blade. It just makes you wonder, did he behave this way with the first Blade came out and the second Blade was being shot? Why did this pattern emerge, I guess?
It does, right. David Goyer was the writer on all three, or at least partial writer. He also wrote the Dark Knight trilogy, which is an excellent film trilogy. As a director, I don't think he's had a lot of success. But it's so weird that you have Oscar-winning guy right in the middle for Blade 2, David Goyer, and then you come out to David Goyer does the third one. Because David Goyer is a comic book fan, like Andy said, this was the most comic book Blade movie. Closest to the comics, you brought in the Night Stalkers. You had Dracula as the villain and another big group of bad vampires rather than just guys in the sewers and stuff like that. So maybe that's why I liked it. Maybe that's why people didn't like it at first, because they weren't used to comic book accurate movies at that time. Everything stylistically about this movie was early or late 90s, early 2000s. But story-wise, it was much more of a comic book movie. David Goyer, he recovered from this. One of the stories I read, he had to hire bodyguards from a biker bar to protect him from Wesley Snipes, who had threatened him the day before if he wouldn't let him. He really wanted a love scene with Jessica Biel that he couldn't get. And so then he threatened violence, and Goyer brought in his own bodyguards to keep peace on the set, I guess. But sometimes you still get a good product, even though there's bad stuff going on behind the scenes.
There was a little bit of comic accuracy here. The character Hannibal King and Jessica Biel's character were both comic book characters, you know, in the Blade comics. As far as Dracula goes, we got to talk about this Dracula, guys. They literally had this guy dressed up like Scott Stapp from Creed. And he's got the brown leather pants. I mean, it's just the most
crop top.
So bad. One big question that kept going on in my brain, like, this is the most powerful vampire of all time. And when he pops in the first encounter with Blade, it's almost like he's running away, taking a baby hostage. Like, what are you doing, man? You're Dracula. You're Drake, as they call you in the film. You know, do something.
The villains in this movie, like, the story seems so big. Like, what they were trying to do was such a huge thing. But then they had like three villains and then one big bad, right? So Dracula. And it was just, the story was expansive and we were supposed to be able to say, oh, this is going to change the course of the world and everything. But then you had these, you know, a couple of these individual fights and it just seemed so small when you did it that way. He wasn't a very imposing guy. And for a rated R film, I'm not complaining, but for a rated R film, the guy didn't do anything that would really scare you. I mean, he had these horns and everything, but I don't know.
It felt like they only gave him his true form at the end of the film for budgetary reasons, you know, like, oh, every other thing he's dressed like Scott Stapp.
CGI was a fortune back then, man. It would have crippled the movie.
He's buried in a tomb for a couple hundred years, but he comes out right to the early 2000s style and leather pants fit him right perfectly. Nice chain around his neck, you know. I did like the end scene when he had that one sleeve of armor that kind of reminded me of the comic book Dracula and the sword and everything. But for the most part, right, he wasn't scary. It didn't make sense at first. The people that found him and he killed some of them, but then They're like, oh, we didn't capture him. They were setting things up that they didn't come through on a lot. Although him holding the baby gave me my favorite part of the movie, which was Blade saying, Gucci Goo, to the baby.
I was trying to see, was the flip necessary to catch the baby, or could he just reach? Or no. like
absolutely necessary. Is it necessary that I drink my own urine?
No. But I do it anyway because it's sterile and I like the taste.
So, yeah, Snipes was reportedly so unhappy with the script that he would force Goyer to do reshoots with the stand-in. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes drama. I wanted to talk a little bit about Parker Posey, who's also been in Dazed and Confused. She was the villainess in Superman Returns. And she was also in Scream 3, which this really makes me feel old. But now she's 55 years old. That is mind-boggling, but she definitely popped up in a lot of movies in that little early 2000s era, maybe late 90s, early 2000s. I thought she was great in Superman Returns. In this movie, you know, one could argue that her performance was cheesy, but then one could argue that maybe it was due to the writing and not so much her. I think she looks, you know, visually, she looks cool, but yeah, I can see where somebody would think that her performance was a little over the top.
When you have vampires as the villains, the good thing is that you can have thousands of them get killed and not feel bad about it. But the bad thing is they're kind of just one-dimensional. They're totally nasty. They're totally bad. She actually probably, besides Dracula, had the best chance of having some dimensionality because they reference a relationship with her and Hannibal King. So maybe she had a bit of personality or humanity. She didn't really come through with that. She just had her standard, I'm the bad guy, I'm going to kill you. Everything I want to do is the worst thing I can think of to do. And I just like being bad for bad's sake.
And it was so funny to me that Hannibal's vampire tattoo just had to be right in his crotch area, on his dick root, if you will.
Right. If he didn't manscape, we'd never know.
She was in Lost in Space relatively recently. I don't know, 5 years ago. She did really well in that. So she has talent as an actress. But I do think that the scripting in this was the limiting factor. I don't know about the directing as far as that goes. But I do think that she tried her best with what she had. And you can see when she's talking to Hannibal King about turning the little girl or like turning him and then waiting. Like, you can see the menacing that she is there, and that you get a little sense of how evil she truly is. And so I think she did all right with what she was given, knowing that she can be a good actress and a great villain in Lost in Space. I think it was a little disappointing, but I think she tried with what she had.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
I think she did brilliantly, actually. Well, I'm comparing her to Drake, Prison Break guy. So I think he kind of set the bar quite low in terms of the villain. When she was on screen, I thought she was sort of the redeeming villain. Pretty much only second to the vampire dogs.
Oh, yeah, that was so bad. Why did they make terrible. That?
It was a callback to Blade 2, though, with the jaw opening up and everything. So I thought that was cool because that's my favorite one. And I was like, oh, okay. That's
30% of the CGI budget right there.
Didn't they establish in the earlier Blade films that Blade could smell the difference between a human and a vampire?
That's a point.
Yeah, he did that
just because he wanted to shoot it.
Yeah, it really felt like, okay, we need him to shoot this human for the sake of the plot to move forward. So we're just going to forget about what we established in the earlier films.
Burning tires and gasoline and everything. I mean, that's going to throw you off, you know?
And he was wearing fake teeth. He used on his visual senses rather than he didn't think he needed to rely on anything else.
As a viewer, though, I was thrown off, obviously, and they did this on purpose, because he's trying to duck out of the UV lights as he's driving. Is he doing that for the benefit of Blade? You know, what's going on there? And then I was thinking like, yeah, good idea, Blade. Turn them off. Yeah. We used them to kill one. And then, you know, we just.
Yeah. Whistler actually dies for reals in this film. It seems like that's the ongoing theme of every single Blade movie, that Whistler dies. Oh, my gosh. No, actually, he doesn't. But I thought that was kind of okay. It happened in the first two movies. So why not let it happen again?
If there was a fourth one, he would have came back. Don't worry.
Right.
We're going to kill all these humans who are coming into our lair. We're just going to shoot them nonstop. Like, that did stick out to me. I was like, who's attacking them? And they're just shooting. Like, I've got to protect your secrets. We got to protect humanity, but not right now.
Right. And who's attacking him? So great question, Andy, because it's the FBI. Like, you're killing them because you did kill somebody, whether you were right or wrong. But they're coming to get you. Mm-hmm. And Whistler's like, well, I'm just going to blow everybody up. That's fine. We're protecting humanity. Blade gives us number 1,267, but they were all familiars. It was 40 FBI agents that were in the warehouse. So who are not mine familiar, who are just doing their job, who thought you were a serial killer.
Law enforcement, you know, mine is them. You know what did also stick out to me? I was like, oh, okay, they didn't have any central servers or Dropbox or anything like that. Like, you had to blow up each workstation. Like, how tedious to be back in that day. Like, quick, throw away the floppy disks. Put them in the shredder. We got to burn these things.
Struggle was real.
Did anybody else notice that even like in the first scene of the film, everything just felt less serious? The first two Blade movies started off and everything was serious. But in this film, even the sound and the music was just slightly less serious. I don't know. That's the vibe that I got.
It's kind of like one of those Fast and Furious 8 intros with the music and the with Vin Diesel walking in all hardcore. So kind of gave those vibes to me, which, like you said, is less serious.
Yeah, I think that was one of Wesley Snipes' main complaints. He wanted a more serious movie. This may be why I liked it more, because it wasn't that. That's what we kind of got used to with the MCU. There are serious moments, but there's a lot of lighthearted moments, too. And this being an R-rated movie, it has Ryan Reynolds, so it's going to have some jokes, but it was not as serious, the vampires. Really, besides Blade, who did the vampires threaten, right? Where were the stakes? The little girl, but everybody was part of his Night Stalkers. There was that one baby that Dracula kidnapped for 5 seconds, but there wasn't a real threat to humanity with the vampires. Their whole point was, we're going to get Blade, and Blade's whole point is, we're going to get them. So there was no third party existential threat, I guess. There was just,
what are you talking about? What about all the saran wrapped people?
Just gonna forget about them. They're homeless.
More people that Blade killed.
Oh yeah. So like, what ended up happening with those saran wrapped people? I mean, once they shut the program down, did they just die?
No, they used them for medical research and everything because, you know, they were making blood for everybody. There's no blood bank shortages anymore. I mean, it really was a leap in technology for the medical industry.
Yeah, I'm pro blood bank. I say we need to get some blood bank in the U.S. today.
You know, I wonder though, if really though they changed the tone of everything. Like you said, it's a little bit more lighthearted. Yeah, it's a comic book movie. But did they go and look and give Ryan Reynolds that much freedom to, because I'm sure not everything was scripted. And then they had to go back and be like, this guy, it's funny, but it's not as serious. Maybe we have to tone it down. Maybe we kind of in editing make it a little bit goofier or more lighthearted. I wonder if any of that had to do with him and his off-script improv.
I would say a lot of it did. And I was going to ask you guys, because, you know, it's so interesting that Ryan Reynolds is really a part of almost everything when it comes to DC and Marvel. He was Green Lantern. He was like that early terrible version of Deadpool. He was Deadpool. He was Hannibal King. He's really been in a lot of superhero projects. Do you guys think, and I feel like this is a fairly obvious answer, but do you think that Wesley Snipes felt a little jealousy with Beale and Reynolds coming in, and it wasn't just about him anymore, but it was about the team now?
Sure, absolutely. I think that he didn't refer to anybody by name. He referred to Ryan Reynolds as that cracker, according to those same reports with Patton Oswalt. Obviously, he wasn't respectful of his or welcoming to his coworkers. He was also, according to reports, maybe dealing with his own addictions and not coming to work completely sober all the time. Ryan Reynolds was not that popular. Jessica Biel was probably more popular in 2004 than Ryan Reynolds was, which is probably why, well, that and just for obvious reasons, the sex scene with her that he never got. I would say Wesley Snipes was not happy with a lot of things on this movie, and probably jealousy played a big part of that. I would say absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I think when Ryan Reynolds did his shirtless scene and you think, damn, I didn't work out this hard for this movie. Damn this guy, because he was pretty ripped in that movie. I'm not going to lie. It sounded like Blade was, or Wesley Snipes. He is Blade, so I'm just going to always call him Blade until the other guy comes in. There is only one Blade so far. He sounded like he is a bit of a prima donna offset. And then you get someone like Ryan Reynolds, who is just charming, even though he wasn't as big as what he was when he joined it. I think he still has that sort of charisma and just that humor that makes everyone laugh. And if you're uncomfortable or you think you're the main guy, I think that would probably set you off in that way.
If you're very much taking your character seriously and you're taking your movie seriously and you introduce this guy who's not being as serious as you want, in your view, he could be ruining your whole movie, your whole franchise, especially if this is like swan song. I think I can see how there'd be a lot of tension saying, no, that's not what we're doing here. Haven't you seen the first two movies? Like, this is a serious thing. I could see how that could cause some issues.
I suppose he's protective of the franchise in that sense because it's the identity lies with him. So I think that's a very valid point Andy just made.
There were a lot more F-bombs in this film. I noticed that too. Like the first two Blade films, I know this is something minor, but it's something that stood out to me. The first two Blade films had maybe one or two. It felt like maybe they had more. I just didn't realize it. But this one had a lot. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, I know it's rated R, but it was just interesting, an interesting change. Maybe a reflection of the changing culture or times, I guess, but
look, after watching Deadpool and Wolverine, this movie felt like I went to church.
Yeah, and where did they all come from? I mean, I noticed Ryan Reynolds said a lot of them, but I didn't notice a ton from anybody else. So again, I'm wondering if he took liberty with the scripting, and I wonder if that was, you know, he's changing the movie, he's trying to be the star, and if you go off script, like, that's not what we're doing here. You know, I could see a ton of friction.
And you wonder if that's because maybe he got along with the director that Wesley Snipes wanted to fight, getting along with him, and the director's given him more leeway to, let's face it, Blade is not a great orator, and he's not a great speaker, he's a cool one-liner. So he's not going to, he might ad-lib a line here or there, but Ryan Reynolds' one-liners are like four lines long. You know, he's got to say a paragraph to get to the whole joke. He's got the setup, premise, and this punchline too. So he probably had more lines in this movie than Wesley Snipes, I would say, even though Wesley Snipes was more featured and more action. And to add about how ripped Ryan Reynolds got, you notice Wesley Snipes in this one, when he takes off the jacket, he's got like long sleeves on and a full, they never show. And I think in the previous movies, you saw more of his muscles and more of his arms and everything like that. That could be maybe Wesley wasn't being as prepared. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds was, and that's 20 years ago. I don't know how he worked out that much, but he's still doing it to this day. The other thing I want to say regarding these two relationships, obviously, Wesley Snipes, spoiler, was in Deadpool and Wolverine, but they didn't make any jokes about Blade Trinity. They made jokes about everything else, and with their time together, Wesley Snipes would say, you look familiar, you look like a guy I used to know. You know, some kind of joke could have been thrown in there. Maybe they cut it out. Maybe it's in the, but maybe he's, Wesley might still be sensitive about it to this day.
What did everybody think about Ryan Reynolds with facial hair? I could not get over that. I just couldn't. Like, from far away, I was like, okay, he looks cool. That's cool. And then, like, up close, I was like, what is going on? I can't do this. It just did not work. It was very distracting, surprisingly.
It was whatever.
Okay. All right. Just me. Okay. Just me. Just you.
So I got to ask the most important question of all. What did you guys think of Triple H as one of the villains in this film? Time to play the game.
I thought they were going to kill him off early, but he just seemed to keep going. Obviously, they had to keep him in. But he wasn't all bad.
Definitely a interesting decision that Beale decided not to use a vampire-killing arrow.
Yes.
Shot in his eyeball. Like,
did that eyeball grow back, by the way? I'm pretty sure at the end of the movie, he still got that eye.
It's kind of like with the villains in the first Blade film. Like, he kept getting his hand cut off, and he kept all this kind of back and forth banter, but it wasn't a, once again, a vampire killing arrow that she used against Triple H.
Yeah, of course.
He had to be around a little bit longer. He was a little cheesy. It wasn't a great performance. I will not say that. I love Triple H, and I'm a big wrestling fan, but it didn't quite work all the way. There were some moments where he had a little bit of bad A-ness, I guess you could say, but overall, it wasn't great.
Yeah, Triple H did what wrestlers do in comic book movies. He was the big, bad, heavy. He's a big, bad guy. He's the tough. He's imposing when, you know, you have to look up at him and be scared. He had the steel teeth, too, right? Or metal in his teeth. He had the grill on top of his fangs. It was just right. There's a trinity of heroes, so we have to have a trinity of villains to match him up. So he was the Hannibal King one-on-one at the end scene. You know, the girl fights the girl, the sidekick fights the sidekick, and Blade fights Dracula. For all those purposes, he was fine. He was menacing. He looked the part. He played it like he was kind of dopey, so it's not like it took a ton of acting skills. He was funny with his Pomeranian. That's it. He's fine.
I kind of wondered why they casted him. Like, what were they going for? What was special about that? Like, what did he bring to the table that other people wouldn't? I mean, was it the physical presence or, you know, what was it?
To be fair, Triple H, I've seen him, you know, because that's what wrestlers do. They're actors, basically, right? I've seen his performances be a lot better in the wrestling world, but that's one of the few big wrestlers that never really translated into Hollywood as well as some of the others. You know, John Cena, which some could argue that a lot of his performances are cheesy too, but at least John Cena had a lot more success. The Rock turned into a great actor. Also, Batista turned into a really, I think, well-rounded actor. Yeah, for whatever reason, for Triple H, it just didn't work. I could see what they were going for, but they certainly didn't nail that. So
I just don't think that with a vampire movie, you have to have a be physically imposing and that. Like, maybe for Dracula, that makes sense. But even that, you would have to be more cunning and shrewd. It doesn't seem like that much more of a threat. Is a big, bulky guy going to get to your throat faster or more effectively? You know, I don't know.
I would think.
You're right. In the history of vampire movies, I'm trying to think of any other instance where there's like a big wrestler type guy that has been, they've all been kind of the opposite of that. Kind of the Dracula, smooth, cunning, sly, but not really big and imposing. That's more of a werewolf thing than a vampire thing, I guess.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of problems overall with this film. And that's what I'm going to get into next as we give our ratings for this film. Guys, if you had to rate this film on a scale from 0 to 10, 0 being unwatchable, I don't want to talk about this movie ever again, and 10 being absolutely perfect, flawless, where would you rank it? I will start off this time and say that the action's not very good. I think that that's one of the main appeals to a Blade film. In this, even in the finale fight with the sword fight against Drake, I just wasn't very impressed overall. You know, like I said earlier, it just didn't feel as serious. All the behind the scenes drama. At the end of the day, I guess in 2006, having a pelvis tattoo was just the style, you know, whatever it may be. As you guys know, I have a list in my phone of every comic book movie ever ranked. And Blade Trinity falls right underneath The Joker. And it is a 3.5.
Wow.
That's probably a controversial take, because a lot of people love the Joker film. It made $1 billion, but me personally, it just wasn't an enjoyable experience for me. So yeah, that's kind of where it fits in for me. What do you guys think?
I don't want to be just one of the cool kids, but I was thinking like a 3.5. I'm trying to figure out, like, is it a 3 or is it a 4, right? So I think the redeeming things that bump it up, I had fun watching it, so that counts for something. That doesn't mean it's a quality film, but it was more enjoyable than I thought. Also, I think there was potential with the subplot of the Saran Wrap humans. I think that that could have been cool. But overall, like the execution, the tone of it, the scripting of it, I think it was a 3. But the enjoyment factor and the Saran Wrap people, I think, prints it up to a 3.5 for me as well.
I guess I'm the most loving of this movie. I'm going to give it a 5, a solid 5, right in the middle. It was not a terrible movie. Maybe again, because like I said, I was expecting such a horrible mess that when I saw a fun, coherent movie that wasn't terrible, I'm going to give it right in the middle there. Of course, it's not great. It is better. I agree with you, Jonathan. I think I'd rather watch this than watch The Joker. That doesn't mean that it's a better movie than The Joker. It's right. A better comic book movie than The Joker, because The Joker's not a comic book movie to me. I had more fun. It made me feel nostalgic, even though I never saw it 20 years ago. It made me feel nostalgic for all of those movies, like The Crow, like The Matrix, like everything else where they have sunglasses and black leather jackets and there's industrial music going on in the background and people are getting karate kicked and sword chopped. You know, what's not fun about that? That alone gives you a couple of points. So I'm going to give it a 5, right in the middle there.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a solid 5.5. It had an enjoyment factor to it. I knew it was bad. Okay, I went into this movie knowing it was bad. I remember when I watched it in 2006 or whenever it was, I enjoyed it then. I did realize it's a movie I never rewatched too much, so I couldn't have enjoyed it that much. The major falling was the villain, with Dracula being terrible. But the rest of it, the introduction of Hannibal King and Beale, I thought was pretty good, of Abigail Whistler. I thought that was pretty good. The action, yeah, wasn't the best, especially, again, the finale fight was terrible. Anything involving Dracula was terrible. Chase scene and all that, that was pointless. The fighting of the minions, I thought, was decent. Like the warehouse scene in the beginning and when they get invaded. I thought those fight scenes were okay. The action was okay. It was just the big action scenes fell flat. Not brilliant, but I enjoyed it enough to watch it through.
Well, guys, once again, thank you so much for joining me. And until next time.